Okay, morning everyone. Today I'm going to be taking a brief look at the journey of the wise men. And of course, a pretty applicable story for this time of year. And as I was reading through it and doing a lot of research and preparation, I thought there was a lot of different messages that we could take that weren't necessarily just applicable to Christmas, but also perhaps applicable to us in our everyday life throughout the year. And I've kind of broken those up. So the first one I'm going to look at, and I'm not going to take up too much of your time, but the first one I'm going to look at is in the pursuit of wisdom. We know these men as three wise men, or wise men. And I'm kind of keen to unpack a little bit of the lessons in the story and the things that they did that we can take on as part of our own wisdom. I'm going to look at who these men were, what actually made them wise, and what relevance they have to us today as Christians and also in our world, and what relevance wisdom itself actually has for us. I don't know if you're anything like me, but when I was growing up, my grandparents had these, at Christmas, they had these kind of lanyards or ribbons that hung down from the walls, and they used to display all their Christmas cards. And I don't know if it was because I was just a young kid, but I used to walk in and there was like thousands of Christmas cards. Couldn't believe how many there were. There was ribbons all around the walls, and I don't know if this is just an Ayrshire thing, but I don't really see that up here anymore. I don't think really even, it's maybe got something to do with the fact that we're not really sending each other Christmas cards that much. We usually just email each other or wish each other happy Christmas when we see each other. But one of the things I remember when I used to go to my grandparents' house was there used to be a number of different Christmas cards that had depictions of wise men. And I've kind of stolen a couple of Google images and not given them any credit, but I've taken a couple of Christmas card images that depict these wise men, and I always remember them dressed in kind of these incredible robes, these really like massive crowns. They were holding these, you know, kind of bejeweled gifts, and they were on camelback, and they were going to see the baby Jesus. And I think in many ways, you create, and I think when you kind of reference the Bible, we look to the Bible of these stories that you think you know, sometimes you can be a little bit shocked on how much information you actually have or don't. And so much of my understanding or my kind of mental illustration of these men were based on these Christmas cards. I'm going to read the actual story in Matthew. Feel free to follow me along. I'm not often very good at following people along when they read, so you can just listen to me if you like. So I'm going to read it here. It's Matthew 2, verses 1 through 12, and it says, "After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, 'Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him.' When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. 'In Bethlehem in Judea,' they replied, 'for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.' Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, 'Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me, so that I too may go and worship him.' After they heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route." I'm going to kind of take a little bit of a look at what we actually know about this story. I'm going to keep in mind the verse from the Bible there, and also some of these Christmas card illustrations in my head. The truth is that we know very, very little about these men. We know quite little about the story in itself. There's often depictions of them being kings. And There's often depictions of them being kings. And I'm not going to criticize the nativity scenes of the Sunday school for them not being kings, but don't worry about that. But there's nothing to say in the verse that they're kings. We don't necessarily know their names either, although I think there are some stories that have come later of named wise men, but there's nothing in this verse that says anything about their names. We also don't necessarily know how many of them there were. Three wise men, it's kind of a term that we use in some songs, we see it on Christmas cards, but there's nothing to suggest that there was three of them. the number of gifts sometimes are associated with the fact, oh, there must be three, but we don't know how many of those gifts there were. There could have been fewer men, there could have been more men. There's also something about this story that we depict in our minds of them appearing at the birth of Jesus on the day in the stable. Again, there's nothing to be said there. This could have been months, even years after Jesus' birth. And again, if you're anything like me, sometimes you can get a little bit shocked at how little you know about some of these stories or some of these parables in the Bible. And for me, that was one of the cases here. What do we do about situations when we don't have all the information? We need to get over it a little bit. I think in Christianity and also in my career in psychology, people can get really fixated on the minutiae detail. We can get really fixated on the small little things, and we can investigate and we can create theories and hypotheses of what's happening. And I quite like geeking out on that kind of thing as well now and again. But when it comes to stories like this, so often I think we can overlook these stories. We can forget the bigger message that's there. We can fixate on the fact, how many men were there? You know, how many of the gifts were there? How long did it take them to get there? How long, you know, how many days, how many months? We can fixate on these details. And I think so often, if we're going to start utilizing wisdom in the pursuit of wisdom, we need to be careful about getting so invested in these small details when we're actually overlooking what the story is trying to tell us. For me, wisdom comes down to a pursuit of knowledge, but using that knowledge in action. For me, there's a difference between knowledge and intelligence and actually what wisdom really means. If we take a little bit of a look at who these men were, there's plenty of kind of suggestions to say maybe they were astrologers, maybe they were theologians. Were they kings? We don't know. Were they scientists? This is me geeking out a little bit on one of the words, but the word magi apparently means, and I think is a Greek word for magician. And back then, the word magician was a bit more of an encompassing word, and it included people that were, you know, reputable scientists. There's something interesting about the dynamic between science and faith, something we often think is at loggerheads. These men, quite possibly, were very astute thinkers. They were scientists, but they were also very profound men of faith. They were foreigners sharing in the Messiah. They were on a pursuit for Christ. And this at times was often hard for Jews to grasp, that there were foreigners coming from another land to understand more about Jesus or understand more about God. There's also something here for me about the fact that these men were thinkers. They used their powers of deduction. They saw something in the sky and they tried to answer what it was. They were profound thinkers, but they were also men of faith. And for me, when I'm thinking about the pursuit of wisdom, particularly Christian wisdom, I think at times we can get drowned by the idea that we shouldn't be thinking too much. These men saw something in the sky. They used their powers of deduction, and they thought about what it meant. I don't know if you ever scroll through Facebook, or there's like a little video tab that you can connect onto, and it shows you all the videos on Facebook that might be relevant to you. And there's been times in the past couple months that I've seen these videos that are like, they say something like, atheist proves God isn't real. And I quickly scroll past that one because I don't want to absorb any of that. Then recently, I actually thought, you know what, I'm going to click on that, I'm going to listen to that. And if anything, it made me, I don't know if I say it right, but it felt like my faith was strengthened as a result of listening to that video, of listening to this person try to argue the case for atheism over the existence of God. And so often, for me, if you're anything like me, at times I think that my faith can deteriorate when I think too much or when I critically analyze too much. These men didn't do that. They critically assessed the situation, and they relied on their faith as well. They were both thinkers and men of faith. What actually made them wise, though? If you think about the situation as a whole, these men saw a star in the sky, and they decided to follow it. And you can imagine a conversation perhaps with their partners or their friends or their colleagues or people that they were associated with, that they were deciding to just give up everything, get on the back of a camel and ride somewhere that this star perhaps was. And if any of us decided to do that tomorrow, I know I definitely would have something to say about that. These were esteemed individuals. They may not have necessarily have been kings, we don't know, but they were men of high social standing. They had responsibilities. They had occupations, they had jobs to undertake. And they decided to give it all up in the pursuit of a star in the sky. That doesn't necessarily seem that wise on the surface. But when we actually dig a little deeper, it was the wisest thing they could have done. For me, their wisdom is not founded only in the things that they said or the things that they thought, or their wisdom is in the things that they did. For me, wisdom is the action on the knowledge that we have, the intelligence that we have. Wisdom isn't about sitting back, considering things, you know, letting things run through our head, wondering what the right option is. Wisdom is actually acting on these things. And in particular, I think that's the case for our Christian lives. For a number of years now, I've had the real privilege of working in Bible class. And you get to see these young people grow and consider things and wrestle with, you know, different concepts in their Christian life and just in their lives in general. And it really is a real pleasure. And one of the things that is often a challenge for many young people, and it's a challenge for all of us, I suppose, is actually getting to the point of how do we communicate Christ to other people? One of the questions that I often get asked, as if I would have the answers, but they ask me anyway, is how do I talk to people about Christ? How do I talk to people about my Christian faith? How do I educate people on what I believe? That's a really hard conversation. In this day and age, at any age, any stage, that kind of thing is a real, real difficulty. These young people are going through a lot in their education, in their school life, and sometimes they feel the extra responsibility of having to talk to people about their Christian faith. And one of the things that I try and get across as best I can is that so much of our communication of our Christian life, our Christian faith, is not founded just in our words. It's not just about what we say to people. It's about what we do. These men got on the back of a camel and they rode, I don't know what the distance is, I think it's like 1,000 miles. And I don't know how many miles you can travel a day on a camel, but you can imagine it's quite a while. These men acted, they gave up everything in order for them to pursue Christ. And as best I can, I try and get that message across to the young people in our Bible class that, you know, if you're able to help somebody in your school or in your class who's isolated, you're embodying Christian wisdom. You're acting in wisdom. There's, again, something here about the fact that, yes, these men were thinkers. They were perhaps even scientists. They were men of real faith, and they didn't have all the answers. For me, that speaks a great deal about Christian wisdom and the pursuit of Christian wisdom. They saw something in the sky. They relied on God's word, but they didn't have all the answers, and yet they still had faith. They still trusted in God. They showed wisdom to rely on his word, even when they didn't have all the answers in front of them. And I'm sure many of us can relate to that as well. I'm stealing something out of the Chronicles of Dave McNaught here, who was very helpful in the construction of this whole... I hope people can see that okay. And Dave, please feel free to shout me down if I get anything wrong here. So this is something in engineering about the pursuit of wisdom, or the utilization of data and knowledge in order to become wiser in your work. And at this bottom layer of the pyramid here, we've got this data, like this raw data that could be quantitative, qualitative data, you know, numerical data. And that gives us information about situations. You know, it tells us something. It tells a story to some degree. The next tier to that is the knowledge. What is that story? What is that information? What knowledge does that give us? What do we now know about these situations based off of that story or based off of that information? The final tier is wisdom. And wisdom is on a different level to knowledge and information acquiring information. It's on a different level. It's about how we use that knowledge. It's about how we act upon that knowledge. That is what wisdom is. And these wise men embodied that entirely. Like I said, they had that raw data. They had that raw information. They used it to create a story. They thought about what it meant. They acquired knowledge of the situation, but their wisdom came in the fact that they were willing to get on the back of a camel and go to it. Seek me and you'll find me. That was where their wisdom was. I was a bit skeptical as to whether to put this in or not. I was doing a little bit of research on this topic, and I'm not going to lie, listened to a couple of sermons and thought I could maybe steal some stuff. But there was one individual who... was reading from Matthew, and he said he speculated that these wise men actually got lost at the start. They were riding from Babylon, they were trying to get to where the star was, but they ended up in Jerusalem when they were meant to be in Bethlehem. There's something to suggest, and I'm happy to be critiqued on this, but there's something to suggest that these men got lost. And I feel quite excited about that, because I really like these stories in the Bible when people make mistakes. I know for me, it's sometimes you can get kind of blinded by the idea that everybody in the Bible has got things perfect. People in the Bible do horrible things. They make huge mistakes. And I think that's really, you know, I love those stories because it makes us feel more human as well. It makes it feel that it's part of our Christian wisdom to make mistakes. And if these men did get lost, there's something about relying on their thinking as opposed to their wisdom. I know I was talking a little bit about, as opposed to their faith, sorry. I know I was talking about Christian wisdom as a balance between knowledge and faith. But when we rely too much on our thinking, we're in danger. I don't think you can over-rely on your faith. And what perhaps happened with these men was that they were happy to rely on their faith in God when they didn't have all the answers, when they didn't know what was going on. We'll just rely on God and we'll go there. Once they start to figure it out a little bit more, they start to unpack, listen, this is something quite big. It's likely to be, you know, there's going to be lots of people there, or there's going to be like a big building and we're going to understand what this is. They started to rely on their own thinking a little bit too much and they got lost. I can relate to that. When I started my psychology doctorate at the first year in 2016, I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. I couldn't even believe I was on the course. I didn't know what I was going to do at the end. It was really, really easy for me to rely on my faith. That was so straightforward because there was nothing that I felt I could do. As things have started to progress a little bit and you start to think, do you know what, maybe I do deserve to be here. I'm starting to pass a few assignments. There's maybe some opportunities at the end. I can feel myself relying on my own thinking a little bit too much. And I think that's exactly what these men did. But their wisdom came in the fact that they recognized that. They recognized that they made mistakes. They accepted them and they learned from them. And that in itself is true wisdom. Wisdom isn't about always getting it right. It's not about how many books we've read. It's not about our ability to reference. It's our ability to recognize the times that we've made mistakes. Take a step back, realize where we've made those mistakes, and make changes. And if that's to believe, I'm blaming this guy who made the sermon, so you can blame this guy. If he is to believe that these men made a mistake and made a wrong turn and ended up in Jerusalem, they stood back and actually thought, you know what, maybe we need to rely on our faith a little bit more, and they were directed to Bethlehem and actually found Christ. I have a real ailment with directions. So I resonated a great deal with this story, and I'm going to give myself a bit of a pat on the back for being wise here. But I have no sense of direction whatsoever. And I think my wisdom is quite evident in that because I 100% rely on Kirsten for any form of direction. When we were in the car the other day, and we were driving, and there was a road closed. I call it road, it was the motorway. That's how bad my directions are. Part of the motorway was closed, and on the side where it was closed, it was on the way down to Ayrshire. And on the right was town. We were near Ibrox. And I said to Kirst, I said, oh, gosh, it's going to be hard for people to get into town now. She said, what are you talking about? She said, town is the other side. It's directly right to your right. So I kind of, you know, I'm able to accept those mistakes I make and actually revert entirely to Kirsten. Kirsten will point in ways when we're like one street away from the house, she'll still point to where we need to go. And sometimes I know it, but I don't say anything because I know I rely on her 100% and she'll bite my head off if I do. So there's a little bit of wisdom in me where I'm able to kind of realize my mistakes, realize where I go wrong, and able to rely on the sources that I need to. That's quite wise of me, I think. To kind of bring things to somewhat of a conclusion, thinking a little bit about why this is all relevant today, and why this story is relevant today, why these individuals, how many of them there were, this story is relevant today, why wisdom in itself is relevant today. For years growing up in church, you hear individuals stand up here and say, I wonder what this story would be like if it happened today. And you think, you kind of get bored of that message a little bit, but I really do wonder what the story would be like if it happened today. First of all, I don't necessarily think these men would be on camelback, but in a world where we're building walls to keep foreigners out, In a point in history when we're siloing our culture, when we're segregating people, when we're keeping our culture to ourselves, and we want people over here, and you know we'll stay here. This is our territory. This is our land. How difficult would a journey like this have been? How much are we as a society lacking in wisdom to have allowed something like this to have happened? It would have been very, very difficult in today's day and age. For me, there's also something about wisdom in the balance of power and submission. Herod's actions and his desire for power were founded on evil principles. He wanted to kill all the two-year-olds in the land and to ensure that the king wasn't going to reign. He wanted to kill all those toddlers in order to do that. He utilized manipulation as well in order to try and get those wise men to do what he wanted, for him to be able to find Christ. They were wise enough to rely on that dream that they had at the end of that chapter in Matthew to know that it wasn't a good idea to tell Herod where he was. And submission in the sense of these wise men were wise enough to know when to submit their power. Like I said earlier, these were men of high esteem, high power probably. They knew when to submit. They submitted via their actions in the pursuit of Christ. And perhaps that's the true definition of Christian wisdom. In a day and age, particularly this past week and in the months that have preceded it, I wonder how much wisdom we've seen in those that hold the most power. I'm not going to ask you about your political ideologies, but I do question it. I question how much submission of power, how much wisdom that we've seen from the political leaders in our world. And these men embodied that. Herod didn't embody that. And to kind of wrap up, I've spoken a lot about these men, however many there were, and their wisdom, and the things that they exhibited. And I hope people get that message of what true wisdom is and what true Christian wisdom is. But I've overlooked, not necessarily overlooked, but I've not talked as much about God himself in this story. I was really struck as I read through the story and I did a little bit of research and considered the story as much as I could, of God's ability to pull people from all corners of the earth to one point. Through all kinds of challenges, these men faced the manipulation from Herod or not having all the answers. They were able to rely on God, but God himself gave them the message. He directed them from a far, far away land. These were foreigners in a different country. And he guided them towards Christ. And for me, you know, I talked a bit about the kind of balance of knowledge and intelligence and thinking with our faith. But ultimately, relying on that faith, having that bedrock of faith and knowing that God is going to be able to guide us to Christ at any point, I think is the most important part of this message. I'm going to invite the band back up as I pray. Father, I thank you for this message at Christmas time of these wise men, Lord. I pray that we can absorb understandings of wisdom, of what it means to be wise, of what it means to utilize Christian wisdom. And I pray, Father, that going into the new year as well, that we would exude real wisdom, wisdom through action, Father. And I pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.